As the song says, the tax man wants you to declare the pennies on your eyes, but what about your severance pay?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Lose your job and maybe there's severance. Taxable, says the government. But whether it's right to tax severance at the company level goes before the U.S. Supreme Court today in a case that involves a company called Quality Stores that went bankrupt back in 2001. Marketplace's David Gurr explains what's at issue and what's at stake.
Severance is considered compensation, so it is subject to income tax. This case deals with about $1 million worth of payroll taxes, what are called FICA taxes. Sean Anderson teaches law at the University of Illinois.
It's the taxes that the federal government imposes to fund Social Security and Medicare.
So are severance payments wages? Alan Viard of the American Enterprise Institute says that is at the heart of this case.
A vagueness, I guess, that's built into the definition of what it means for something to be remuneration for employment.
Quality Stores says severance payments don't amount to wages because the recipient has been let go. The Obama administration disagrees and says that if it loses, it would owe money to employees and companies beyond Quality Stores to the tune of about $1 billion.
$1 billion, of course, sounds like a lot of money, and it is a lot of money.
Bill Gale is a fellow at the Brookings Institution.
But not in the context of the federal budget.
This is another ambiguity in a tax code that's now more than 70,000 pages long. In Washington, I'm David Gurra for Marketplace.
One of Ben Franklin's sayings has special resonance in West Virginia this week. When the well's dry, we know the worth of water. That's also the case if the water is contaminated. Authorities have now lifted the water ban in many spots near Charleston following last week's chemical leak. Marketplace's Dan Weissman looks at the everyday cost of going without.
Amanda Hardman appreciates her good luck. She's got a car, so she can get to distribution spots for bottled drinking water. Better yet, her husband's got an old house outside of town with a well. 15 people from 3 different households are making the trek for showers. But the water tank there is limited, so it's brought home some everyday lessons in water conservation.
You know, not to leave the faucet run while you brush your teeth. Not to leave the shower on while you shave your legs.
And that taking a shower is worth a 30-minute drive each way, even if that means other chores don't get done and social life grinds to a halt. Economist David Zetland wrote The End of Abundance, Economic Solutions to Water Scarcity. He says Charleston residents have at least temporarily flipped to a third-world experience of water. The real cost isn't just the bottled water and the paper plates. It's the time you spend getting your basic needs met.
In the developing world, young girls don't go to school because they spend their entire lives gathering water.
For today, schools in at least 4 counties in West Virginia are staying closed for both boys and girls. In Chicago, I'm Dan Weissman for Marketplace.
Want to see Marketplace live? You can enter to win a chance to join us at the Norse Theater in San Francisco on January 28th as we discuss the new era of philanthropy. Details and rules at marketplace.org/trip. The Federal Reserve has a lot of valuable stuff on its books. After all, it bought trillions of securities from banks. But could something designed as stimulus turn into nasty inflation down the road? As Marketplace's Sabri Benishor has been telling us this week, the Fed has a plan.
Yesterday, we talked about how the Fed can set interest rates in new ways for certain banks. So, you know, if down the road inflation becomes a problem, it can raise rates for those banks to deal with it. But there is a problem. A significant part of our financial system isn't banks. It's other things like hedge funds or money market mutual funds. And for them, the Fed needs a different tool to set interest rates. And here it is. I present to you
reverse repo.
Now, on a scale of 1 to sexy, repo sounds, you know, negative 10, but
the repo market's actually a very, very critical part of the money markets.
That is Frederick Mishkin, by the way. He teaches at Columbia's Graduate School of Business, and here is how it works. When a big financial institution wants to, say, make a loan, but it doesn't quite have enough cash to do it, it'll basically go to a pawn shop. Welcome to Sabri's Repo Pawn Shop. How may I help you?
Hi, Sabri. It's Bank of Stacy. Can I pawn these bonds? I want to take the cash and lend it to my friend, who is going to pay me 5% interest, but please save the bonds because I want them back later.
The financial institution pawns its bonds for cash, and it'll repurchase the bonds back later. That's why it's called repo. But the bottom line is the repo market is like a pawn shop for financial institutions, and it helps them lend. So what's reverse repo? It's what you do to get financial institutions like the Bank of Stacy not to lend to her friend so much because it's causing inflation. Here's how you do it.
Bank of Stacy.
Hey, Bank of Stacy. This is Sabree's Federal Reserve Pawn Shop. Listen, just forget about your friend, okay? How about you lend that money to me instead? Here is some of my bonds as collateral, and I will pay you 10% interest.
What about my friend?
Can she pay 10% interest? I don't think so. So if you could just give me that cash, thank you. See what I did there? I kept the Bank of Stacy from lending for a month. Or at least if she's going to lend, it'll have to be to someone who pays more interest than me. That is reverse repo. It's a way of asking not just banks, but all kinds of financial institutions to lend at higher interest rates. In New York, I'm Sabree Benishour for Marketplace.
Thank you, Sabree. And Tony and Joe Fioravanti of Staten Island, New York, just celebrated their 66th anniversary by going back to the Waldorf Astoria, the same fancy hotel where they spent their wedding night. They had kept their receipt from 1945, and the hotel let them stay for the original price, just $15.75. Before you say, aw, I'm guessing room service breakfast would have cost them $67.50 or something, and not even for the Eggs Benedict. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.